two nights ago in Philadelphia, there was the sound of shattered glass and then this announcement on a giant video board.
And I can't believe we just put the biggest crack in that glass ceiling yet. Thanks to you and to everyone who's fought so hard to make this possible. This is really your victory. This is really your night. And if there are any little girls out there who stayed up late to watch, let me just say, I may become the first woman president, but one of you is next. Thank you all. I can't wait to join you.
Well, Hillary Clinton, of course, she has her political critics. Much has been made of her unfavorability ratings among potential voters in this election. Still, the history of that moment, the first time a major American political party has nominated a woman for president, cannot be denied, regardless of your political stripe. So we're asking today, what took America so long? What has it taken to get here? And for women, what have been the sacrifices and challenges of being in the arena, as President Barack Obama put it last night, quoting Teddy Roosevelt? And finally, how could Clinton's nomination affect women in politics in the future? Joining us to discuss these questions is Rebecca Richardson, president of the Greater Kansas City Women's Political Caucus. Rebecca, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Elizabeth, or Beth Venami.
Right.
Beth Venami, associate professor of political science at UMKC.
Good morning.
Thank you both of you for joining us. Let's start, Rebecca, by going back to that moment on Tuesday, Hillary Clinton formally winning the Democratic nomination for president. How did you see that moment? What was going through your head?
Well, honestly, I was involved in her first campaign, and the night of the primary here in Missouri, we were celebrating because we had won Jackson County, and I was so happy to, you know, I believed in her positions, and I loved it that she was a woman, but I learned to not celebrate too soon. So I see it as, yeah, it's a milestone, but what I'm really looking for is a win in November.
Beth Venami, what does it say that Hillary Clinton, who in the past pointedly has not played up her status as a woman, seems to be embracing that role now?
Well, I think it's an important role for her to embrace. Half of the country is female, so embracing, you know, her gender, I think, is important for her to win in November, and I think it's been important for her to do well during this primary season.
And what makes it different from 2008?
Well, I think there are lots of differences from 2008, but I think in 2008, she was more cautious about it, and I think it's a different campaign. Barack Obama was also breaking historical ground, and so, you know, it was kind of an interesting take in 2008 when you had two candidates who were on the verge of making history, and was a different situation this time around.
We should say we're also now joined in studio by Jean Peters-Baker, the District Attorney of Jackson County, Missouri. Ms. Peters-Baker, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
I'll bring you right into this conversation. Before you came, we just heard a clip from Hillary Clinton's formal nomination on Tuesday night, that glass-shattering video that's been making the rounds. For someone who's watching, as a woman who's been in the political arena, that Teddy Roosevelt quote, what did it feel like to have a presidential candidate, you know, refer to little girls who'd stayed up to watch that night?
It was very exciting, but it was, you know, I'm in a family that we all gathered around that television set, and my husband was just as excited as I was excited. My kids were excited because a new door has opened, literally now opened for all of us. So it's a very exciting day, and I guess I have to say today with a heavy heart with Dutch Newman's passing, she was just this great female political leader in this community as long as I've known it. I'm so, so happy she got a chance to see Hillary Clinton make that speech prior to her passing.
It was a poignant contrast. For that, you know, those two events happening, you know, within 24, 48 hours of each other. And Central Standard, in fact, the show just before us was talking with Jolie Justice about Dutch Newman, which we can touch upon later. For our listeners, we'd like to hear what you think. Why has it taken the U.S. so long to have a major political party, have a woman candidate for president? What does this mean going forward? If anything, in your opinion, 816-235-2888. Please call us. Again, that number, 816-235-2888. 1-800-235-2888. So let me just ask it to our panel here. Why has it taken the U.S. so long to have a woman candidate running for the chief executive office? Rebecca.
You know, I was thinking about this issue, and one of the things I was thinking about is in this country, we understand infrastructure to be about roads and bridges and sewer lines and water lines, but we don't think about what are we doing with our families. So we have working women who are kind of making it up on their own about how to deal with kids and so on. And I think, you know, I was involved in a program called Vision 2020 from Drexel University, and they talk about women sort of being across the board with all leadership roles, right around 20-25%. And I think by not having, you know, a basic plan for how women go to work and thrive in a work situation, that it holds us all back. And it holds back families because women are being stalled in their careers and they're not, you know, benefiting economically from what women's work is, you know, all about.
Beth,
so that's one issue.
Beth Venami.
Yeah, so from a research perspective, there are a few things that we look at when we think in terms of candidate emergence and the success of candidates. And one of the things that I think is critical for explaining why we haven't had female candidates at higher levels of office especially be successful is because we have this sort of delay in that there are lower level offices that are now occupied by women, but they weren't in the past. And as women sort of start occupying those offices, they then move up to the next level and the next level and the next level. And so it's, you know, there's a delay there. And hopefully this will start to inspire more recruitment of women and encourage people to actually run for office, and especially, you know, quality, qualified women. That there's so many out there, and a lot of them are not running for factors that, you know, Rebecca talked about. There's lots of strategic factors that prevent women from running, not just family factors, but also, you know, what kind of support will they get from the party? What kind of campaign finance situation are they facing? What kind of negativity might they face from competitors? And so all of those things, I think, feed into why we haven't had a successful female candidate.
It's like something that I heard earlier this week. It's, you know, people who recruit potential politicians for office, the men often ask, can I win? The women often ask, what will this mean for my family?
Right. And that's, you know, certainly men take those things into consideration, but it's really critical that when we recruit female candidates, we focus on the issues that are going to be important to them, not just in terms of political issues, but personal issues as well.
We do have a caller. We'll get to her in just a second. Just turning to Jean Peters Baker, you are in political office. What challenges did you face as a woman in politics?
Balance. I think the balance. It's what some of the other panelists have already talked about. It's weighing my responsibilities to my family, to my children, time away from them. Same thing, you know, dad's face, though, too. So I don't view myself differently in that regard. I'm a mom. That's a role that I'm proud of. And, you know, it's a family role, though. So I did want to say one other topic, though, going back to the recruitment. I recruit women to run for office. I spend a fair amount of my time recruiting women to run for different seats. And what I find rather shocking is when I meet with women and I say, have you thought about it? I'm thinking about you for it. It would be great. You should consider it. They often say, well, you know, I don't know if I'm qualified to do that. It's one of the first things that we have to walk through is their qualifications. And I'm like, you know,
these are successful women. I mean,
they are
women that you've had your eye on as people who would be good for
yes,
political office.
And they absolutely
haven't, and they haven't thought about it themselves.
If they've thought about it, they critique their own qualifications. They scrutinize them. What I try to always bring to the table is, hey, that 22-year-old young male that's going to run against you, I don't think he spent as much time scrutinizing his own resume as you have, you know, with your 40 years of experience. So it's a little bit of a shift, I think, for women to put your foot out there.
Having once been a 22-year-old man, I can attest to that. if you want to call us, 816-235-2888, what does Hillary Clinton's nomination mean to women in this country, women in politics? And how is it, or why has it taken so long? I want to get back to a moment earlier in the convention. Of course, Bill Clinton's speech last night. I wonder what your reactions to that were. I heard a couple of different lines of criticism of that. People either loved it, thought it was very different and unique, and other people thought that maybe it was taking the wrong approach, especially for trying to create a feminist case for Hillary Clinton. What are your thoughts, Rebecca?
I think Bill Clinton is a very clever guy, and what he did is by intertwining his personal relationship with Hillary, he tricked us into really looking at the details of what she's done in terms of public service her whole life. So if you go back and listen to that, you know, if he had just talked about what her qualifications are in terms of like her early work, you know, even in college, traveling around the country, working on social justice issues and issues for children. I mean, what he did is he tricked us into listening to her whole biography and her qualifications. And, you know, I mean, I thought it was funny in a way. But also, I think, you know, it doesn't hurt for us to see her as a whole human. You know, and part of that is, you know, being a young, you know, good-looking woman, you know, so.
Beth and Ami.
Yeah, I thought it actually, he did a great job humanizing her. There's been this real disconnect between how people who know her personally feel about her and view her and how people sort of on the outside view her. And I think it's important for the campaign that those two things merge and that the people who know her well and have talked to her personally and like her quite well, that translates into how the public feels about her. And I think telling sort of their love story and her sort of her life story was a good way to get us to that point that a lot of the people like Emmanuel Cleaver, who know her well, feel about her.
Okay, Philip, you are back on the line in Midtown. You're joining us on Up to Date. Go ahead with your question.
Sure. This is what I wanted to, the observation I wanted to make is that for literally centuries, we've always accepted the idea of women supporting their husbands in seeking public office. And really, we're in, particularly in the United States, this is sort of the first time that we can now see men who are supportive, very supportive of their wives seeking public office. And that is a major shift that has helped empower very good, very talented women to be able to serve in public office. And of course, I've been in love with Hillary a long time. At any rate, though, I think that it's important to understand that is sort of a shift from the way our parents' generation viewed public office and who could seek it.
Thank you, Philip. Jean Peters Baker, sitting there, I see thoughts going through your head. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that's not different. I'm married to a man who works hard on my campaigns. Works hard supporting me to be a good public servant. So he's been a partner to me in every possible way. And quite frankly, that's what I signed up for when I married him. It's not just to lend him support, but for him to lend me support. So we're partners. And I think we represent America. We represent American relationships.
Brittany, thanks for coming back. You're in Kansas City, Missouri. What do you have to say on Up to Date?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Go ahead with your question. Thank you so much.
Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, thanks. Okay, good. I just wanted to make another observation. I'm a young professional in the city who does a lot of work with local and state politics. And for me, the struggle has been that young people were very divided on Bernie versus Hillary. And so this nomination has created sort of a new discussion among people, I guess I would say in like the 18 to 35 demographic who are wanting to vote in this election and make their vote count. And I think that it's interesting for the future how Hillary's nomination now, it's opened a lot of people's eyes. And I think what Jean was saying earlier is exactly right. Women do not believe they're qualified for office. And especially young women, I've been lucky to the Greater Kansas City Women's Political Caucus has embraced me and been, you know, very supportive, and I've been asked to run. And of course, the first thing I said was like, I'm not qualified for that. And it's I want for the future, I think the Hillary nomination might sort of start to quell some of those conflicts that women struggle with when they decide to run. And it'll be a new generation of young women who are going to have only known President Obama and then Hillary Clinton as their president, potentially. And that's just a huge, huge door that's open for so many of them.
Brittany, thank you.
I just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, Brittany, thank you so much for your comments. Rebecca Richardson, you have some thoughts about this.
Yeah. One of the functions that the Women's Political Caucus has is to be kind of that first door that women go into when they're thinking about running for office. So some of the conversations we have are, what is your path toward running? What do you need to do to prepare? And honestly, women have to be asked several times before they run, and they have to see that they're going to have support. So like our organization is probably one of the first places where women give a stump speech. We teach them how to raise money. I think raising money is one of their main concerns. So we have really good campaign schools on off election years. And I encourage people thinking about running for office to come to those. I'll be next November, not this coming one, but in 2017. But we really kind of coach women and act as a support team. And I think that's really important, beyond, you've got to have a support of the family and so on. But we really give women the tools and make them comfortable in making the decision.
We have a panel in studio discussing the impact of Hillary Clinton's nomination on American politics, the future going forward, and what it means for us now and why it took so long. We'll come back after this and continue this discussion on Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Yesterday, we got to know the two Democratic candidates facing off for Kansas Senate District 5. And we spoke with writer Delia Efron about her latest novel. Hear those conversations at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow on the program, we learn the songs and composers that painted Kansas City's musical landscape in the beginning of the 20th century. Also, we look at the shortage of primary care doctors and the impact it is having nationally and here in Kansas City. Well, back to our discussion about the glass ceiling being shattered by Hillary Clinton's nomination on the Democratic ticket on Tuesday night, what it means for America and why it took so long. Jean Peters-Baker, Jackson County prosecutor, you mentioned Dutch Newman when you first got in here, and that leads me to my question. Who were your political role models, male or female? But, I mean, since we're talking about women in politics, who were your political role models growing up?
Well, I can't overlook. Probably the most important to me was Claire McCaskill. I have her office. Literally, I sit in her office. I still describe it as we're meeting in Claire's office this morning. I got to watch her as a young assistant prosecutor and watch how she led. She was fearless. She was passionate. She was smart. She was also political. And she balanced all those things. She was a mom. So I got to see it done. And I got to see it, a woman exercise her authority and power, I think, in a really positive way. So that was probably the biggest for me.
Yeah. Rebecca Richardson, who were your role models?
Actually, when I first graduated from college, I lived in San Francisco. So when we first got there, we had, the tragic, incident of, the mayor being shot and
George Moscone
Harvey Milk. And it was quite shocking. And, Dianne Feinstein stepped in there. I mean, it was a horrible situation, but that woman handled the situation with such grace and really assured, the city, that things are going to be all right and things are handled properly. So, I mean, she started out in 1970 as on the board of supervisors. She's the first female board president and then became mayor in 1978 suddenly. And then in 1992 elected to the Senate. So, I think that one advantage women have is that when they actually serve in office, and I would appoint to Dean is a great example. You know, they do a great job and people trust them. And so I, you know, it's really encouraging. I mean, when you look at these sort of women breaking glass ceilings and you see the path, you know, a lot of Barbara Boxer was the first woman I ever donated money to. She was my county supervisor. And then she became the head of the board in Marin County in California. And then she went on to House of Representatives and then to the Senate.
And she spoke earlier this week.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, she's amazing. I still send her a little money here and there. But the thing is that there is this path that women take, and I think it's really incumbent upon us to fill the bench, you know, so women are ready to go on to higher office. But she was... Those two women, you know, in my life were very, you know, instrumental in forming my ideas about the quality of women in government.
Let's return to the phones. Charlie, you have been very patient waiting. From Lawrence, you're on Up to Date.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'll make my comment quick, but I think the question was why it's taken so long for women. And I just have to say that based on today's, you know, and what we're listening to today, in the world of politics, and that some of the disparaging comments made to women about women, and that it comes with the same evidence to say, well, there's an acceptance of level of somebody that says things like that, that it's the discrimination is so far out there that, of course, there's all these young women or whatever age they may be, they're still apprehensive about having to face this acceptance that people still have about women that are strong, that are powerful, that are leaders, and I think that's the reason it takes so long to get there. It's just the same thing with the minorities. If you know the prevailing thoughts out there are so inflamed with the rhetoric, why would you ever step forward and get into that melee? And I know it takes courage, and that's what Hillary is showing us, but I think that's a big point to be made, that it's still out there, the discrimination. And for someone to say what they're saying nowadays about women and that he's still popular with 40 or 50% of the vote, it goes to show you that it's still out there. And until Hillary's going to break that ceiling, and maybe that'll change. But that's why I think it takes women a long time to get out there.
Thank you so much, Charlie, for being patient, waiting, and giving us your comment. Beth Venami, your reactions to that observation.
I think Charlie's right. I think there are obstacles that women face. One of those is discrimination. And female candidates are treated differently. And it's not just, you know, in sort of, you know, random stories you hear. There's documented evidence that people evaluate female candidates more harshly than they do male candidates.
Give me an
candidates.
Example.
Well, one of the, I think, classic examples is appearance. Very rarely do people talk about the way a man looks. But Hillary Clinton has faced this kind of discussion for her entire life. We're always talking about, I mean, she's now embracing it with sort of her pantsuit discussion to try to sort of, you know, make it into a joke. But it doesn't feel good for 20 something years of your life to be, you know, always discussed what you look like, your hairstyle, your clothing. Are you attractive? Are you ugly? And that's something that men simply don't face in politics. Very rarely, I should say. Sometimes you hear, you know, some talk about dad genes, right, for Barack Obama. But very rarely do you have much discussion about appearance. And that's a big difference.
And it's not done from a position of power, right? I mean, making fun of Barack Obama's dad genes
right.
He's
the president.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's done in a comical way as opposed to a really critical way.
Jean Peters Baker, your thoughts?
I say to hell with it. To hell with that. In politics, it's often not fun. Those are all of us step into critique. We step into the line of fire of scrutiny. You can survive it. You can survive it. It may not be fair, but it is the environment, and we need women in this in all levels of elected office. So to hell with it. I'm here to tell you, you can withstand it. You can.
Do you still think that discrimination between male and female candidates exists, though?
I do. I've read certain comments that are made about some of my, I would call them colleagues, especially attractive females, I think, seem to get a whole different set of scrutiny lobbed at them. Again, seeking political office is so important. It's so important to have a balance. It's so important to have women in all levels of elected office. I would just encourage women, other men who support their women to go do this, to hell with it. Go encourage them to do it. You can withstand it. It will not kill you.
Rebecca, jump in here.
I was going to say my favorite women candidates are the candidates with a mission, because that, you know, like you've been saying, it's like to hell with it. You know, they have a goal in mind, and, you know, they're going to overcome the obstacles, which include name calling. But I think also for those of us who aren't running, it's incumbent upon us to call out the sexism and challenge it to a certain degree. I mean, I think we need to not just, you know, accept that people are going to, you know, almost get to the level of hate language.
Cynthia, you join us from Overland Park. You're on Up to Date.
Yes, hi. I was discussing the fact that often women think that strength and femininity are two diverse positions. And often women are uncomfortable communicating the strength, and that caused people to not look at maybe running for office. Case in point, with Hillary Clinton being praised for all of her accomplishments, everything she's done since college, the most common references to her was a role as a wife and mother, not that she knocked down significant doors. So it's amazing that if you're not a wife and mother, you can't run for office, and then, my God, forgive you for communicating your strength.
Do you think the role of wife and mother, as important as that is, gets downplayed in the political arena? Rebecca.
I think women can use it. I mean, you know, I know a young candidate running who's got kids, and, you know, she's fantastic. You know, and she embraces that she has kids, and, you know, and she basically says, you know, I care about my kids and so on. So I think, you know, while nobody's asking her male opponent what's going to happen to the kids while she's working, but, you know, she shows her strong family. And so I don't think it's a detriment at all. It can be an asset.
Beth.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the caller that I think it's, and as our discussion has unfolded, I think it's critical that women run for office, and that they sort of, you know, embrace all of their roles and not try to downplay, you know, their family life or their political life. I think it's really critical because, you know, women do make different kinds of decisions than men will make, and the policies they support can be different. And if we don't have voices at all levels of government, then we won't get change in a meaningful way. So I think it's really important, not just to inspire young girls to run for office. That's obviously critical, but there are really policy implications to having women in office. And I think that's something we shouldn't undervalue.
Jean Peters-Baker, you mentioned earlier, you know, you still refer to your office as Claire's office, Claire McCaskill. What is the landscape around the metro politically right now for women in politics?
There's no limit. I don't see it. I don't see that there is a limit. It is simply us having this kind of discussion, continuing to have it. People like me and like Rebecca, you know, must recruit women to run for office. If women need to be asked, then we need to ask them to consider it, and encourage our women to do that, because I do think this is a generalization, not true for everyone, but women are good collaborators. That means women are generally good leaders because we bring partnerships to the table. We're willing to share our podium and share credit for getting good things done.
Rebecca, you were nodding your head.
No, I totally agree. I mean, you know, with the caucus, again, that's what we try to do, be a support structure to, you know, our tagline is recruit, train, elect. So we're trying to recruit women. We're trying to give them the tools to learn how to run a good campaign. And then we're trying to get them elected. So that, you know, involves fundraising and going and working on campaigns, you know, doing door knocking, doing phone calling. So, you know, that's what we aspire for our members to be doing.
We have time for at least one more call. Ashley in Overland Park, you're on Up to Date.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. I was just calling to make a comment about femininity and the double-edged sword of using that to place women in equal roles. I had originally been a Bernie supporter, and it was a hard decision for me to make because as a woman, you're not supposed to use your femininity to make equal decisions, you know, not just in, you know, political but professional and just everyday life. They say, you want equality. Well, we can't reach that equality until we get women in business. And so it was a hard decision for me to make because we need a woman president to create those equal roles. But it's a double-edged sword because then it's like, are you using it just because you're a female? And so that's a hard thing. That's a hard decision to make as a woman voter and as a woman just in life and my professional role at work.
Well, thank you so much, Ashley, for calling. We just have about 90 seconds left. She is alluding to maybe what Donald Trump has derisively called the woman card. Beth Venami, what do you say to that?
I think it's perfectly fine to vote for somebody because they're like you. We call it descriptive representation in political science. And it's important because people who are like you have experienced certain things. Men haven't experienced sexism like many women have. White Americans haven't experienced racism. So I think it is important to have people who are like you in office. And so I don't actually have a problem with people voting for sort of, you know, people who are like them, provided they share some attitudes with them as well. But I think it's perfectly fine.
Jean Peters-Baker, the importance of solidarity within the female community, if there is one?
It's much broader than that for me. I think this is a family issue. I think equal pay is not a women's issue. It's a family issue. And so is women running for office. So it's better for all of us, our young men, our women, to have fair representation in all levels of elected office.
Well, we'll have to end it there. We've had a great discussion. Our panelists today, Rebecca Richardson, Beth Venami, and Jean Peters-Baker. Thank you so much for joining us on Up to Date.
Thank you.
Thank you.